Morning, can people hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Hi all. We'll wait the canonical 2 minutes before beginning. I'm trying to check. Is Aaron our treasure map? Yes, you are. Treasure map presenter for later. You're online. Good. All right. David Shoemaker, are you able to attach the presentation from Aaron to the agenda in the wiki, just so it's there?
I thought that was done. I'll double check the email thread.
Okay, perhaps it was. Perhaps it was. I didn't notice it in the linked, but perhaps it's there. Yeah, see it in the agenda, but maybe I'm looking in the wrong place. Anyway, let's see. So, Kata.
Yeah, the Brandon slides are there. It's under a highlighted thing that says slides. Thanks to Peter Sean, by the way.
Sorry, am I looking in the wrong place or something? I'm confused.
Yeah, I can't see the slides for the treasure map talk either.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were asking about Brandon's slides. I'll work on getting the treasure map slides up.
Ah, right.
I also just posted a link in the chat to some slides. There are just a few because then there'll be a short live demo.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Aaron. Okay, let's get started. Quick announcements. I'm going to just take one thing a little out of order here. First up, do contact us if you would like to make a short presentation during these calls. We're later on going to have a presentation from Aaron about the treasure map that they've been working on. And so that's an example of the type of thing that we think is probably useful to share with people. So that's the first item. Second is related to that. We're going to continue these calls through the end of 03 and probably through the end of April through the end of May. Would be my guess, given that the run is currently slated to end at the end of April. After that, we will solicit some feedback on whether the monthly call is really what is most useful and whether or not we should adapt and do something slightly different. Right now, we think it's worth continuing through the end of the run just to maintain contact. The thing that I'm taking a little out of sequence on the call this morning is if you go a little further down the agenda, the planned LVC publications based on 03. First of all, as you know, we did put out a paper about the 25th of April event. I didn't get a chance to confirm this morning yet whether or not the parameter estimation samples have been published about that yet. They are on the list to be published, but there's been technical problems that are being worked on to get them ready. They may already be out, but I suspect not yet. But we are working on it, and we'll get them out as soon as we can. Second item is that with respect to that, we were working pretty hard to get that paper out in a timely way, but the end game on it became a bit complicated. And as a result, we didn't get an announcement out to this list that it was coming. We will do our best to do better about that in the future. You'll still have a sense of when papers are coming out, but in the broad strokes of which month, we'll do well on that each month and tell you. But we'll try and do a little bit better about announcing that when we anticipate submitting a paper either to archive or it appearing on the journal or something like that. We're currently working on several other exceptional events, and that is the 12th of April event, S19041-2M, Also the 21st of May event, that's 1905-21G. And the 14th of August event, that's 1908-14B BV. The sequence of dates for them coming out, I would say right now, none of them look like they will be out sooner than late February. And it's likely to be much later than that, by weeks much later. But we'll give an update when the time comes. The gravitational wave transient catalog, the update for using the O3A data, is still slated for release in April. We're going to have a number of companion papers that go with that, doing the standard things that you might anticipate, rates, other interpretational issues. And as we get closer, we'll be able to give a sense of the types of things that we're doing. The one other thing that I want to tell this group today, I just figured I'd report it verbally, and at some point in the near future, we'll have a very short memo or a news piece on the LIGO website about this, is the release of HFT, the strain data. We are committed to releasing snippets of order an hour, it's not 40 minutes or so, of HFT around any candidates that we publish. And so for the 25th of April event, we did that already. We'll do that for any of the other events that get published before the catalog. When the catalog comes out, for any candidate listed in there, we anticipate having that snippet of HFT available so that people can do parameter estimation if they wish and other things. So it'll be snippets of order an hour with whatever number of candidates end up in that catalog. The first bulk release of HFT, so basically all of our analyzable data, is planned in April of 2021, and that will be the O3A HFT bulk release. So the slate for that is to get it ready for that time. And then the O3B data is slated for release 6 months after that, which is in September of 2021. The stated target, just so that everyone knows, if you were wondering about this or wanted to or had it in your mind, is that we had reviewed our ability to deliver HFT in a timely way and settled on 18 months after the end of each 6 month block. So that's the length of time it takes us to get through initial science preparation on the date from the data, and then also make it available in the public domain. As I say, we will be posting that more visibly on the LIGO Virgo websites in the coming weeks so that people can have a reference to it. All right, that's the whole set of announcements for now. Any questions or related to that, to those? Okay, in that case, let's move into the main agenda items. Keita, are you able to take it away?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so let's get started. And maybe somebody else want to share the slides. But, you know, this is an update of the O3, mostly O3B, LIGO Virgo Kagra from the RUN coordinator and the Joint RUN Planning Committee. On slide two, we are about, you know, 10 weeks into the O3B, and so far so good. And three interferometers have been running at the same time, 51% for the time. At least two instruments were available, 85.something%. And there was only, 3% or so, zero interferometer time. And the downtime includes everything, including maintenance. So this is an excellent number. And, you know, you can have a look at individual instrument performance or something. But anyway, the baseline information is that we have made an improvement in the duty factor for all of the instruments. And you know, this is due to a hard effort of the instrument scientists. And this is excellent. And on the next slide, this is a O3B binary spiral range. So this is slide three, binary spiral range versus the time. And blue is Livingstone, red is Hanford, and purple is Virgo. And an arrow indicates the holiday season. And excellent thing was that, you know, Livingstone and Virgo performed really excellently in terms of stability. I think there was a almost 100% duty factor week at Livingstone. And on the other hand, you know, you can see a hole in H1 at the end of the holiday. That was like 36 hours downtime. And this shows you that, you know, during the holidays, when it's good, but when a disaster happens, nobody is at the site except for an operator, and you know, providing remote support over the network is really not just the same, and it takes more time to recover. And also, after the holiday break, you know, there was a little bit of a jump in the binary neutron star in spiral range for H1, and this is an example of, you know, constant tweaking and optimization that we are doing to improve the performance of the interferometer. So let's move on to the next slide, which is the statistics of the alerts. And we have issued 19 alerts, including 8 retractions since the last open LVEM telecom. But I have to remind you that I didn't have time to include the last retraction from this morning, maybe 4 hours ago or something. So actually it's 20, including 9 retractions. The plot on the left is a cumulative count of events, and not really events, but non-retracted alerts. So these alerts are just candidates. And the plot on the right is public alerts by month. And I feel as if, you know, the retraction rate is a little bit higher than I'd be really happy with. And let's move on to the next slide. And actually, let's jump to the last bullet point because I talked about the retraction. So, you know, we really cannot totally eliminate retractions. But 2 out of 8 retractions in this period could have been programmatically caught before sending preliminaries. And the fix is in place. And as for the last retraction, so that the third one, seems like it also could have been prevented. And the fix is going to be in place. And the plot on the top left is a latency histogram of preliminary alerts. So that's from the event time to preliminary. And it's got faster with lesser outliers. Actually, you know, this is excluding a huge outlier, which was manually issued. And I'll talk about that event later. But anyway, you know, this is due to the efforts of low latency software developers at multiple fronts. And we plan to implement incremental improvements like these throughout the O3. For that matter, we also, you know, implement something to prevent sending out something that should not have been sent out. And the plot on the right is the initial or retraction alert latency after the preliminary is issued. And this is, of course, human dependent, and it seems like we're on average taking 20 minutes for both initial and retraction. And I wish that I can make it shorter, we'll try. Okay, the next slide is about the explanation for the 20.0.1.0.5 AE. And this is a sub-threshold Livingston Virgo event candidate. And that was sub-threshold. The false alarm rate is, you know, like 24 per year, so it's really bad. And the P terrestrial number is displayed at 97%. So why did we bother to send this out? The next slide, if you look at the GCN text, we said things like preliminary human bearing of this candidate indicates a chirp structure in the L1 time frequency plane, blah, blah, blah. We also said our examination of the data indicates that the signal has greater significance than what was calculated in real-time processing, blah, blah, blah. What does this mean? In the next slide is an explanation of the first part, preliminary human bedding. We do all sorts of things for human bedding, but anyway, one of them is manual inspection of the Omega scan, a tool for time frequency analysis. And the plot shown here is an example of the Omega scan of the interferometer stream for GW150914. So note that this is not for 20.0.1.0.5 AE, but anyway, this is to give you some idea. And we do something like this systematically for all useful channels, not just strain, for all candidates. And you know, the plots themselves are generated automatically. And in this event, 20.0.1.0.5 AE, we saw a clear chirp in L1 Omega scan, but not in any of the L1 witness channels. So there was a suspicion that, you know, this is more real than false alarm rate of 24 per year would suggest. And in the next slide, then why is the significance so low? Basically, you know, this event was L1 only as far as the online FAR is concerned. So Virgo was also running. And that's because, you know, the signal to noise ratio of Virgo was not really good. And single detector events are heavily penalized in the production code, estimating far larger than we believe in this case, according to the pipeline expert. And the better code is being developed. And we don't have a revised significance, but we send parameter estimation based update for localization and also the classification, assuming that this is of astrophysical origin and has neutron star probabilities 98%. But there is negligible chance that there is any, you know, remnant matter. So anyway, that's a story about this event. And that's the reason why we sent this, even though the latency was huge. Okay, the next slide, the future of O3. The planned end date of O3 is still April 30th. And as always, incremental improvements are to be made for instruments as we go. You know, this is both for noise and stability. And we'd like to see the X1 duty factor of O3B continue till the end. And for that matter, you know, of course, incremental improvements are to be made for the analysis pipelines and the low latency infrastructure, as I explained. And the last item is, you know, we've been saying this for a while, but the Kagura will join. In the next slide, Kagura finally successfully locked the instrument in power recycled fabric pearl, make it some interferometer configuration, but only for a short time. And I have to say that this is a huge milestone. And they have already installed the output mode cleaner, which we believe is necessary for noise and sensitivity improvement in the set configuration. This was already installed. The optimization and noise hunting continues for a while. For now, we are, or they are, planning to start observing sometime in mid-February. And infrastructure to fold Kagura members into event vetting rapid response team is in place. Well, that's all I have. The last slide is just an assortment of random pictures for your viewing pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Keita. Good. Let's see. Any questions?
Yeah, just a small question. I noted that during the holidays, the sensitivity for Hanford was falling, and I wondered why. First and second, was that related to the 36-hour break that eventually happened?
Okay, it was not directly related to the downtime. The downtime was triggered by the failure of the computer. And the downward trend of the sensitivity, in part due to the maybe the weather, and I believe that it's in part due to a slow degradation of the squeezing performance. And you know that was restored, and some other improvement was made for the squeezer, and that's the reason why the Inspire range jumped up sometime after the holiday was over.
Cool. Okay. Thanks, Keita.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Go ahead, Mansi. Oh, Mansi, we don't see a microphone for you. I gotta see if you're chatting. Yeah, Mansi, we can see your hand up. We can also see that you have video capability, but we can't see a microphone. I'm gonna pause for a minute if you want to put a message in the chat window or something. Yeah, we saw that earlier, Mansi. I saw earlier that you were connected by phone, but right now I just see one of those no video connection. And there's no sign of a microphone or a telephone. Do you want to try rejoining and we'll come back to your question in a minute? Oh, okay. All right, let's see. Is there somebody online that would like to take that one? So the question is, why is it, does it take us so long to get updated sky maps after the initial notices go out with star-based sky maps? I can just give the high-level response if I'm trying to see if there's an expert on, but the high-level response, Mansi, is just that the when we run the waveforms, the time to get a convergent Markov chain Monte Carlo run or a nested sampling run, it just takes time. Depending on the waveforms, it takes longer, and depending on the signal, it can take a long time as well. We're still a little bit, I would say, uneven in time to delivery of updated sky maps based on the LAL inference runs, but the group is trying to streamline that in the sense that the time that is person interactions is being trying to be improved. Yeah, believe you me, Mansi, it's being worked on. Many people would like to see parameter estimation results be through more quickly. Okay. Niall?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I joined slightly late, so maybe this has already been covered, but I just wondered if there was going to be any comment on 2001-14. Obviously, I understand any comment might be limited, but I suppose most specifically, if nothing else, on whether there's a sort of time scale for that you could give, or an estimate for any kind of either confirmation or retraction of that event.
So I'm going to put that to Keda. Just as the initial response, I know that event has been handed off already to our burst group internally, but Keda, do you want to add any additional comments?
Okay, so the false alarm rate itself, we trust the pipeline expert that, you know, it is sound. Doesn't necessarily mean that it should be real. And I don't know, I personally don't know what kind of update is going to come or not come.
Niall, just to give you sort of context on this, we're very much aware that anything like this, we really need to retract if we have reason to distrust it. At the present time, there is no, as Keda said, we think the false alarm rate estimate is pretty good, is trustworthy. That said, it is not a standard CBC, as you saw from the circulars and other things. And so the other thing that of course goes on is to assess data quality and to understand if there are witness channels for problems in the data. So far, nothing like that has come up. It's been worked, I think, rather heavily, but I don't think we have an expert on the line to sort of tell us what the actual status is today and whether or not there'd be further updates coming in the near future.
Thanks. That's pretty much at least the what I was hoping to hear. So good. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Thanks, David. All right. If there's no other questions. Okay. So let's go back to the agenda, and Mansi hand just went down. I think it was just left up. All right, so back to the agenda, low latency pipeline updates. And so the first one is a brief update on the status of the what we call Raven internally. Brandon, are you on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, awesome, thanks. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about a big module that's been added to the low latency infrastructure, Raven, something that was for coincidences with alerts from the external astrophysical community. So as of a couple of days ago, the Raven low latency pipeline is now among the searches that can issue automated public alerts. Raven has been something that's been around and used internally actually for the last few years. And we've used it to just, you know, follow up on coincidences and check them out, but we haven't had anything, you know, super exciting to talk about. But right now, if we have a set of published conditions that get passed, then we're able to automatically issue a public alert using this system. So Raven looks for coincidences between a GW trigger, and then again, our upper false alarm rate threshold is 1 per hour. And then, you know, external coincidences, either Fermi or Swift GRB or ACE News neutrino bursts, and we receive those as GCNs. We use the time window of -6600 and -1 5 centered on the GW trigger time, for bursts and CVCs respectively. We use a window of -10 and +10 centered on the GW burst trigger for snooze coincidences. And in the case of a GRB coincidence, we calculate a joint FAR, and when that joint FAR is beyond the same threshold as we use for GW alerts, 1 per 2 months for CVCs, then we will issue a public alert. This DMR criteria, including, we won't send out an automatic alert if it's a sub-threshold GRB. Instead, we'll come together and make human betting on both the GRB and the GW coincidence. But for a burst coincidence, we're using the same threshold as we use for normal GW alerts, but just for the joint FAR of 1 per year, and then we'll send it out. So in the case of a GW snooze coincidence, we don't calculate a joint FAR because a snooze event has a FAR that is already so low that the only thing we really need to check is whether the GW event is relatively significant. So we decided to put the threshold at below 1 per day. And in that case, we will send out an alert. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, awesome. Let's move on. Okay, so currently in this iteration that's running, we are not able to use spatial information. We're not able to calculate a spatial coincidence FAR or a joint map automatically, but this is, this is being worked on right now. There is a merge request in the code that's being reviewed currently, and we're expecting to add this, shortly, hopefully in next week or next few weeks at the worst. So in general, the idea for this alert system is that it's going to be how we send out alerts is going to be nearly identical to how we do to the GW alone alerts right now. And the differences are that if we send out a notice and we send out a circular, it'll just have some additional information. So there's documentation in the user guide about the additional bits of information that will be in the GCN notice. Things like, the observatory that we had a coincidence with, the GCN number, time separation between the alerts, the joint false alarm rate, and then things like combined sky map and, spatial coincidence form once those are added. So there's a limitation for this current design, and it's that there are a few design issues about sending alerts with multiple coincidences. So when we send out a GCN notice, where we will be only mentioning one external coincidence, but we can have a case where there's multiple GRB experiments that can find the same astrophysical GRBs. Fermi and Swift can find the same thing, but if there's multiple ones, we'll mention them in the upcoming circular, and that will be laid out. But then note that's going to be something that's going to be worked on in the future, and potential. We're trying to figure out exactly what the best way to communicate that out is, but that is one current limitation. And then for the circular, again, noting that we're going to include some additional information compared to the normal circulars that we sent out with information that's relevant to the coincidence. Okay, that's all I have. Do we have any questions?
Thanks, Brendan. Okay, if there are no questions, thanks for that update. I'm glad that's in production now. Let's go to the next item. So the next item is just an update on the user guide. Leo, are you online? Is Leo here? Leo's not online. Nevertheless, let me, I guess, Brian, do you want to give a comment on the numbers in the in the archive article?
Yeah, so this is a, we had a two simulations that we ran, and then reconciling them, we found some fairly minor discrepancies. They don't change any of the conclusions. The study was ongoing while the article is under review at Living Reviews of Relativity. We recently received that referee report. But while we're working on that, we wanted to update the user guide with the latest numbers. And we also updated the version on the archive and the public document in the DCC. The numbers changed a little bit, on the order of 20% for some, but the conclusions are essentially unchanged.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, and just a reminder that to everybody, the user guide is, of course, the place to go and look if you want to have up-to-date information about how to interpret information in the notices, circulars, and other things. So please do use that. And as Eric types in the window, this new user guide does have, covers the inclusion of the new Raven alerts that are also in the mix. Okay, if there are no other questions, okay, in that case, I think we'll move on to the next item, which is, as I said, I gave an update on the publication plan and others at the beginning. So we're going to skip down to the presentation, which I think is being given by Aaron, on some updates to the treasure map portal that they've been working on. Aaron?
Yeah, can people hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen if that's okay. Because I'm going to do a little...
Yeah, let me stop sharing first. Hang on a second. I may need to do that. Okay, try now.
Yeah.
I may have to give you capability, do I? Let me see.
No, I think I can do it. I'll stand by.
Okay.
Can people see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yes, so hi, I'm Aaron Tovo at the University of Toronto, but I'm sending this on behalf of the entire Treasure Map team, which is listed below. For the people who weren't on the last LVEM telecon that we first presented and debuted the Treasure Map on, I'm going to give a very quick introduction to what it is, and then I'm going to hop right into a tour and hopefully a live demo. The live demos are always dangerous, so let's see how that goes. So the Gravitational Wave Treasure Map, the link is here. You can click it and, you know, browse at any time. But essentially the idea is that we, for a lot of reasons, we really need to find the electromagnetic counterpart to gravitational wave. If it's there, find as quickly as possible. As everyone knows, there was this, you know, approximately 12-hour gap for GW17817, and that was a very well-localized event. The issue is that in order to constrain a lot of the physics that's going on, you need early time observations. And one of the problems with early time observations is shown in this slide here, which is that at the very early times, everybody who's doing either tiling or galaxy-targeted searches of the air region are looking more or less in the same spot. And you see an example of how that might be a problem here. You know, if everyone observes the highest probability region and the kilonova or other counterpart is somewhere else, that's a problem, especially if the combined resources are actually sufficient to cover out to that contour at early times, but they're not because they're all being directed. And the idea is, in order to do something like this, obviously you can't force, and no one wants to force observers, but we want to build a platform that allows people to share relevant information if they want to, so that people can use that information to coordinate if it's something that's relevant to them. And so basically that's what we did with the Treasure Map. Treasure Map is a web portal that rests It's on an easy-to-use API that allows observers and instruments to push, to post, and get pointings that they do in follow-up of gravitational wave alerts. But even if you don't want to coordinate, it's still useful to post your pointings because, for instance, let's say you don't want to coordinate, but people still want to know, okay, after the fact, once all the tiling is done and we didn't find anything, what was the likelihood that we would have found something? Right now, that information is scattered across sometimes hundreds of GCNs, circulars that are in various different formats. And the treasure map system is a way to collect all that information in one place. So in the upper hand corner here, you're seeing all the pointings that were submitted to treasure map for the NSBH candidate S190814BV, and nothing was found. And you can ask, okay, what's the likelihood that nothing was found under your favorite emission model? And at the bottom figure, you're seeing the raw posterior localization that was covered as a function of time. And so you can, you know, theorists or whoever it is, or observers that they want to write their papers, can use the information from the treasure map also post facto, even if no coordination was done, to calculate things like this. That's a really brief introduction. There's a lot of other reasons why people might want to share information in order to get credit. I'm going to skip right to the final slide, which is really the meat of it. These are the updates and new features since the last main presentation. The main new feature is that we've had a lot of community participation so far since November. This panel on the right that you're looking at is the list of participating instruments that have posted pointings in O3. You see SWIFT, XRT, and UVOT. You see Sinistro, which is one of the Las Cumbres Observatory Global Telescopes. You see the Wiki Transit Facility. You see NMT, Magellan, Catalina Sky Survey, Canada, France, Hawaii Telescope, the WISE Observatories, and then the GRB instruments. And on the left, these are other new features. So at the request of people in the community, we implemented digital object identifiers for citing reports. So the idea is that when you post your pointings, they can have a DOI associated with them, so now become citable objects. So if and when people pull that information, they would then cite your object and say, you know, in the same way they would cite a GCN circular. There's a time slider, which will demo. Fermi coverage of gravitational waves is automatically ingested at the time of the alert. And there's new tutorials. There's a paper that we posted to the archive and new API. So I'm going to switch real quickly to just doing a quick demo of the website and then hopefully a live demo of pushing pointings. So this is when you go to the website, the homepage, this is what you'll land on. That panel, that leaderboard thing is on the right here, and that updates in real time. Always on the front page will be the most recently reported gravitational wave that has not been retracted, and that's the one from yesterday, 15J. And you can see 15J, the 50 and 90% contours are here in red. And you can see that WISE, which is an observatory in Israel, has recorded some pointings. And you can see them here. And I would say that on this visualization engine, you see the coverage of the pointings, but also sort of associated with each pointing is a timestamp, a filter band, and a depth. And all of that information is accessible via the API. And also on the online. So let's go look at maybe another more. So if people recall, this was a gravitational event, S1912-16AP. This is the one for which Hawk and Ice Cube issued GCNs for possible coincident gamma rays and neutrinos. A lot of people.
Aaron?
Load. Yes.
Just a quick heads up. I don't know if it's only me or if others see it as well. Your voice is getting a little, I think because you're doing the demo, your bandwidth is getting a bit overused. So you might want to just let things load and then talk.
Okay.
Just heads up on that. We can more or less make out what you're saying, but it is cracking up a little bit.
Apologies. I'll try to speak slower and more clearly. So what we're looking at here is all of the pointings that were posted by the community in response to S1912-16AP. With apologies to Mansi, I'm going to quickly turn off this Wiki Transit Facility pointing so that we can see what other people did. And you can see coins that were boosted by Wise, by the Lux Umbrace 2 meter, by Swift, by Catalina Sky Survey. The locations of the Hawk and Ice Cube neutrinos are here covered by the blue and purple Swift coins. And then if we zoom back out and we turn back on the Tsuki Transit Facility coins that were reported, you can see that there's quite good coverage of the vast majority of the localization. And again, each of these coinings also has other information associated with it. So that information we can access both by the website, by let's see, show the other information that's associated. So what you're seeing here is a table of all those pointings that we just saw in the visualization. And you see there's also a depth and a band and a position angle and a time associated with these things. And these are all much more easily queryable via the API, which is documented here. So we have a notebook tutorial that basically shows you how to participate and how to use API, and it's all well-documented. And just a last example of one of those meters, we think the one of my favorite events, which I've mentioned before, it's this one, 1984 PDB, just because it's so well covered by you know, Magellan and Canada France Wide Telescope and Swift and Western Moonbase. And then down here is the coverage calculator, which I showed before, but also as part of the coverage calculator, you might say, okay, I only want to know coverage of the probability as a function of time if it was deeper than 28 magnitudes, than 20th mag, and I only care about coverage in I and G band, and then you can calculate, and because there's so many pointings, it might take a little bit to run, so we'll wait a second. But the idea is because all of this information exists in the API and backend, these calculations that are relevant for not only observers, but also theorists that want to know if their favorite emission model is constrained and run these sorts of calculations. And as soon as this is done running, okay, it's done running, and you see this is a coverage profile of the function on the x-axis of hours since the gravitational wave event, and the y-axis is the percentage of the gravitational wave localization covered, and this is to the depth of greater than or equal to 20th magnitude in only G and I bands. And this is obvious. You know, you can change the form and cut on whatever you want. So now they've demoed some of those things. I'm just going to go back to the most recent event and see if I can demo pushing the most recently formed coinings for S2015J. So I have my own global copy of one of these notebooks. And I've instructed JSON pack API uses, and what you're seeing here is just in each packet there's an ARIA, deck, a band, the instrument ID for Swift UBOT 12, the depth that was achieved, the depth unit, which is an AB mag, the time, the positioning, the status. And let's see how many of those I have. So post from Swift, 287 UBOT pointings from Swift. And then here we're just saying what grace ID I want these points to be associated with in the treasure map. My personal API token, which I'm not going to share with you, but anyone can register for one. And so let's just run these cells. And great. So this is saying it has assigned these pointing IDs. Amazing. That means it's successful. And if we go back here now, and we, so before there was only Wise pointings, and we reload this page. There we go. We can see a bunch of Swift. Now Swift UBOT pointings associated with the wave event. They're obviously not only in the slope, they're scattered around. The Swift ones are in yellow. Oops, that's a good one. And it's as easy as that. And again, all of the ways to interact with the API are documented, and there's a tutorial. And with that, I'll end and that I say that the treasure map is the resource. And because of that, we welcome people requesting features that they might want or find useful for their science. And an example of one of those is since the meeting has implemented automatic for me coverage, not only for me, but GRB instrument coverage. And if we go back to that quickly, what that means is that as soon as gravitational wave alert comes in, we process and display exactly where the Fermi LAT instrument and Fermi GBM instrument had coverage at that time. So we turn that on, and then we see everything in this red region was covered by Fermi LAT at the time of merger. So it was, you know, some part of the localization, but not all of it. And you can do the same thing for Fermi GBM and with that, what was the coverage? And this basically lets you answer immediately, you know, less than a minute after the gravitational wave alert comes in, okay, if there was a GRB a second ago, would it have been seen by these instruments? And we are open to implementing other features that the community might find useful, and we encourage our people to participate. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Very nice. So clearly this is a great sort of tool to build up our ecosystem of ways we can interact. Has anyone got any questions for Aaron? Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, this is Mark. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, so the audio problems, I was thinking that if you had two channels, one for the video and one for the audio, if that would clear it up or just greater bandwidth. Because I thought that presentation was excellent, but a part of it, I'm a little hard of hearing. I couldn't hear all of it. So, you know, or maybe pre-record it is another idea.
I think, Aaron, that one... Perhaps a nice thing here would be actually, I don't know if you've already done one, but you might actually plan a little screen capture with audio overlay of a demo like that and put it up on YouTube. I think, Mark, we can't really do much about the technology. We could try to have a parallel channel, but I think the bandwidth is still an issue out of or in two different places. Okay, any questions about the actual?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, no problems. Any other questions about the treasure map itself? Actually, sorry, I just realized there's some new messages maybe. Okay, no, good. All right, Aaron, thank you very much. I want to encourage others. I think these monthly calls, we're not gonna do more than that. We will end them early if we don't have content, but we really do want to try to create some multi-directional conversations. We know there are subtleties about sharing types of information, as you well know from us, but still we want to encourage interactions and especially sharing tools that might actually allow us to do a better job at multi-messenger. So please, that's great. Thanks, Aaron. So please do contact us if you'd like to add a presentation to an upcoming call, either on scientific issues or otherwise. Given that the first event from O3 has now been published, it's also possible that some people would like to give updates on observations they've carried out on those public events. And so, you know, if you do, if there's a time when that's appropriate, please respond or send an email to David and we'll make that happen. Okay, with that, I think we're going to sign off this morning. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.